Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
They were once members of one of the largest and most powerful criminal groups in the world.
They're called Yakuza, the gangsters of Japan. They inhabit a world of drug running, prostitution, extortion, and other crimes.
Comprising some 25 distinct organized crime families, the Yakuza have long been a subject of myth and fascination in Japan and abroad. They've been the focus of classic films. Hit contemporary television shows.
What's it like to be a Yakuza? I could write about that.
Yes, but then I'd have to kill you.
And best-selling video game franchises.
So he's finally back, the Dragon of Dojima.
But in real life, the Yakuza are in serious trouble. They're going extinct. The number of official members of Yakuza syndicates continues to drop each year, down to some 22,000 from a peak of more than eight times that number. What's behind this dramatic fall of the once powerful Japanese mob? And do the numbers tell the whole story? My name is Jonathan Vitt, and this is About Asia. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Martina Baradell, a criminologist at the University of Oxford, who researches organized crime in Japan. Okay, so I think the best way to start this conversation is just by defining some terms. When we talk about the Yakuza, what do we mean?
So when we talk about the Yakuza, we are saying the collective name for the 25 criminal syndicates of Japan. So it is a criminal organization that we categorize the same as, for example, the Italian mafia or the Russian mafia. So it is a criminal group, like long-established criminal group, that offers also some kind of governance on the territory. So also has some kind of control on the criminal markets, as well as semi-legal and legal markets too.
Can you tell me the names of some of the larger syndicates?
Yes, so we have the biggest group is the Rokudaime Yamaguchi Gumi. This was originally much bigger, so they have an internal split. So now there are three of them. But let's say the main one is the Rokudaime Yamaguchi Gumi. Then there is the Inagawa Kai and the Sumiyoshi Kai. These are usually the top three that are mentioned. And each group is made up of many different groups and many different layers. So when we say Yamaguchi Gumi, we mean one. This is kind of like an overarching structure, but within the group, within the syndicate, there are many smaller groups.
Can you explain a bit of the history here? Like what role did the Yakuza serve in the country when they first began to rise to power?
You know, if you talk to the Yakuza, they always want to make the point. They have a very long history. So if we think of the modern Yakuza, so with like contemporary Yakuza, like how we see the Yakuza now, it's we can say it's more or less after the war. The country was in a very difficult situation. So they took up this role, many groups, to organize the black market, which is where most of the people would get, you know, food and necessities. So they were huge, like Tokyo, Osaka, they had very big black markets that needed to be organized.
Is it illegal to be a member of the Yakuza?
It is legal. You can be a member of the Yakuza. So while, for example, in Italy, if you are a member, like if you become a member of the mafia, then that's already, membership is already outlawed. In Japan, you can, first of all, you can organize a Yakuza group, let's say. So it is not illegal to do that. And if you join a Yakuza group, per se, it is not illegal. Let's say that in practice, you have many limitations to your life. But yes, you can in principle be a member of the Yakuza without many further repercussions.
What were some of the legal industries that the Yakuza were involved in? Like, if it's not illegal to be a member of a Yakuza organization, presumably they are involved in actual legal businesses, correct?
Yes, they are at the moment involved in legal businesses. But let's say in general, so for example, construction is a big sector that the Yakuza is usually involved. And even now that there are connections to that. Waste management, you know, disposal. So let's say they say the three K jobs, so jobs that are dirty and dangerous, usually are what the Yakuza is involved in. And of course, entertainment. So in the past, it would be even entertainment with, you know, television and films and, sumo, all kind of entertainment. So, but if we consider like nighttime entertainment, restaurants and bars and hostess clubs, and, you know, that also would be something that the Yakuza has traditionally controlled in some part.
Why were the Yakuza tolerated in Japan for so long?
I mean, there can be many speculations, but it is, I would say it's just an approach of controlling organized crime. One kind of approach, which is very common in Europe, in the US, is criminalizing. And while in Japan, they chose a different approach. Of course, there were also many connections with the government and, you know, many power groups. And usually we want to see, like, we see Japan as this very country which is not corrupt and, you know, everything works perfectly. That, I would say, is not the case. And actually, the Yakuza had very strong connections, especially with the, you know, major political party, the LDP, which is even now in power. So I'm sure there is also some kind of connection there that didn't make the Yakuza illegal from the beginning. And also, if you consider like the international situation as well in the 80s, like after the war and, you know, the fear of communism that they also had in Japan, especially, you know, with the connections they had with the U.S. government. The Yakuza has always been a kind of conservative group. And they also had many far-right groups. They could be used to control, you know, just in case, an armed force. But let's say in general, it's just an approach. So you keep the Yakuza, you don't keep them in the dark. You keep them as a normal group, and then you can have conversation. You can, you know, you can ask them to be quiet. It is a way to control crime.
So it's almost like the argument goes that by having this group around, because they have, you know, official offices and stuff like that, that the police can sort of have regular contact with them in discussion, right?
The police would have quite a good connection with the Yakuza. It is not the case anymore, but I mean, it served the government quite well. I mean, if you consider the levels of crime and violence in Japan, they've traditionally been very low. And the Yakuza also, because they are not illegal, they have this kind of moral standing where they are kind of protecting Japanese people, they are protecting Japanese society. So traditionally, there haven't been many cases of the Yakuza killing normal citizens, killing police officers like we had in Italy, for example. So that also kind of helped keep the situation in peace.
And this is something as well that you sort of hear people in the Yakuza sort of promote, right? Like their own sort of mythology that this is a far more like chivalrous criminal organization than something else, correct?
Exactly. So the code of honor, like the code of rules that the Yakuza have, which is called Ninkyo, usually it is, you know, especially people who are active in the Yakuza, but even people who have left the Yakuza, they recognize this is like for them. It is, and, you know, a big part of joining the Yakuza. So it is not only making money, which of course is the biggest part, I would say, especially if you were a Yakuza in the 80s. I mean, you could really make big amounts of money. Now it is not the case anymore. So it really boils down to, like, also you need some kind of ideology behind it. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. This kind of traditional norms, like of helping the poor and kind of protecting normal citizens, it is also something that you find in other mafia groups. So it is not something that only the Yakuza have. Maybe the Yakuza has it, you know, very codified, and it is connected to a tradition which is not particular to the Yakuza. But yes, people believe it. And yes, of course, if you want to be a Yakuza, you do it for the earnings and the money and the power and for many different reasons. But this is also a legitimate reason to become a Yakuza.
So during your research, I assume you've met with a number of people who are like current or former members of various Yakuza groups. How true do you think all of this is? Like, do you think that this sort of code of honor and, you know, we don't really interfere with civilians and stuff like that, is that actually something that is practiced in reality, or is it sort of an idea that existed at a certain time?
I think it exists for people. It is true that some people, they were really drawn to the Yakuza because of this, maybe to put some kind of organization and structure in a life that maybe was not so privileged. So, you know, the background of many Yakuza members is not very wealthy. So it is understandable. Like how many people are attracted to the far right? There are many people are attracted to this kind of conservative vibe. Values and traditional values, it gives them a sense of purpose. But I mean, the Yakuza in the end, it is always a criminal syndicate. So of course, violence, it is also quite a big part of being a Yakuza. And I mean, when I mean violence, it doesn't always have to be exercised. So the threat of violence many times is enough to get what you want, like to get someone to cooperate and to pay. So I mean, violence, it is there, but many times it is lingering rather than an actual threat.
It's interesting today that the Yakuza as an idea are in the midst of this pop culture revival, but locally the numbers are actually in decline, right? Looking at the data in 1963, there were more than 184,000 people who were officially members of a Yakuza family. That's basically a small city, but in 2022, that number dropped to a little more than 22,000. So what happened here?
So 1963 is, let's say, still after the war. So it's still a period where many people, maybe they couldn't get a job. So it is normal that many people would turn to the Yakuza to, you know, to make a living. Of course, when the situation stabilized and Japan started their, like, its economic recovery, a lot of people started going towards normal jobs. But at the beginning of the 90s, there was a new, like the first anti-Yakuza law that was introduced, and that had some sort of impact, but not too strong. I would say that the 2010-2011 anti-Yakuza regulations were the ones that had, you know, most of an impact. So these regulations are not a law, so they're not applied evenly all over Japan. They are introduced by each prefecture, and they kind of regulate and restrict the life of people who are official members of the Yakuza. So if you are a member of the Yakuza, you cannot open a bank account, or you cannot have insurance, you cannot rent a house, you cannot do a lot of things. So it has quite a big impact. On the other hand, we also should consider that the economic situation of Japan has been quite, you know, they have been in a stagnation for 30 years. So the earnings that the Yakuza can make, as I said, are also quite tied to the legal economy. And if that doesn't go well, also for the Yakuza, it's not a good thing. So, I mean, the share of money you can make is much smaller. You have a lot of restrictions. And, you know, even being in the Yakuza here, you have a lot of rules. So maybe some people who, like young people who would like to do some kind of like a criminal career, maybe, you know, they think it's better if I just do it by myself and then I don't have to do the training and just follow the rules, follow the boss, and have all these limitations in my life. So they turn to some kind of more disorganized criminal activities.
So going back to the beginning here, the first of these laws came into effect in the early 90s, and that was following a half decade of conflict between Yakuza families, right? Like that was a mob war that resulted in more than 200 shootouts and 36 deaths. What did these initial Yakuza laws focus on? And you mentioned that they weren't really effective. And why was that?
First of all, they wanted to regulate what was happening, right? So these commissions, the public safety commissions, were instituted. And then these commissions are the ones that designate Yakuza groups. So if you are a Yakuza group, you also need the government to recognize you, and that's the role of these commissions. So they started doing that job of kind of regulating what groups were belonging to what syndicate and kind of made that clear. And then, of course, they put some restrictions on Yakuza activity. So while in the past you could have offices with big signs, like you could be quite overt, you know, and flashing what you were doing, then from the 90s that started to be toned down. There were some limitations on the activities as well, but for example, if you look at the Yakuza membership in the 90s, we see that full members, they kind of, you know, go down for a little bit, but then part-time members, so members who are about to become Yakuza, maybe they haven't undergone the ritual, then that number goes up. So let's say that in total, it didn't have a big effect on membership.
Okay, and then 20 years later, right, there were new ordinances that came into effect that were far more impactful. What were these ordinances and sort of what were some of the controversies around them?
So these ordinances are called the Boryokudan Haijojore and are Yakuza exclusion ordinances. They were introduced starting from 2010 and then throughout 2011 all over Japan. So these ordinances, they are controversial in some way because they... So you can be a Yakuza, it is, you know, you can join the group, but on the other hand, you are not granted many of the, you know, freedoms that normal citizens are granted. So you cannot stay at a hotel, you cannot, they said, have, you know, rent a house, or you cannot do a lot of things. Of course, you can always use someone else's name. And I mean, it's not like that since 2010, there's no Yakuza with a mobile phone, everybody has it. So there are ways to go around it, but it is surely not very convenient. I remember a few years ago, I was talking to this boss and he told me, you know, we were a little bit too much. So we took too many liberties, and also because the number of frauds and let's say predatory activities increased amongst Yakuza members. So he kind of, you know, took responsibility for that. And so he said, you know, it's fine in the end, only people who really believe in the Yakuza code will remain. So he was kind of optimistic, but I can see recently this kind of lifestyle wearing down a little bit.
So it seems like these ordinances sort of really prevent known members of the Yakuza from doing a lot of very basic things. Is that constitutional? Like, this seems like it sort of would interfere with somebody's civil liberties.
Yes. I mean, I think it is a fine line. Even if it's not constitutional, I don't think you would find a lawyer happy to fight for this. So that's the thing. I think the best strategy that the Yakuza is doing right now is kind of, you know, just lay low, don't cause problems. And the tolerance in general for the Yakuza has diminished. So they also should consider that. While in the past, there would be more citizens that could be like kind of supportive and saying, oh, you know, it's necessary evil. We have the Yakuza, but at least we don't have gangs running around our cities, and the Yakuza help keep everything in control. Now, I think the tolerance for the Yakuza has gone down quite a lot. So it would be difficult to fight it, to find, you know, people who want to fight it. But there is also another aspect, which is that as like citizens, they are prohibited now with these new regulations. They cannot pay the Yakuza. So paying the Yakuza is, you're, you know, liable if you pay the Yakuza.
So basically you're saying that not only is it illegal for the Yakuza to do a lot of things they used to do to collect money, but this protection money as well, it's illegal for a citizen to pay the protection money.
Exactly. So if you, while in the past it was not the case, so you could pay the Yakuza to, you know, to receive some services. Now, you cannot give money to the Yakuza in any form, so you cannot pay them. Even if, like, the Yakuza is running a company and you know that that company is run by the Yakuza and you are buying a service for them, that's also something that now you are liable for. So paying the Yakuza in any way is not allowed anymore.
One thing that's interesting here that sort of strikes me from this conversation is, in the past, when there were less ordinances and less regulations, the Yakuza were involved in legal businesses, right? So that was a way to make money. But now, with there being less avenues to earn this money, it seems like they're getting more and more involved in the kinds of things that typically would be what a mafia would do. So is there any sort of concern or conversations about the fact that maybe some of these ordinances are actually making a criminal group even more criminal than it was to start with? Or were they always involved in this stuff anyway?
I mean, they were always involved in this stuff because the Yakuza was always kind of the main force in the illegal market. So there is the concern that these regulations are pushing the Yakuza underground. But the fact that the Yakuza has been kind of pushed out from legal markets is not only due to regulations that are against the Yakuza. So a lot of markets have been regulated more and more, especially after the bubble in the 90s. So when the bubble burst and this stagnation started, a lot of markets received, for example, if we think about the labor market, the Yakuza was very involved in labor brokering. They would control all like kind of like daily workers. They would work for construction companies and kind of do that. So when that sector was regulated, that's when the Yakuza went out. Like more competition, more regulation pushed the Yakuza out. So the Yakuza is active in many sectors, and regulating the sectors is something that really works, rather than having only targeted actions against the Yakuza. So there are many ways of doing this, and yes, I believe that only limiting individuals' rights is not something that in the long run can work.
So basically, it sounds like this makes it all much less attractive to join a Yakuza syndicate. I would imagine that these groups saw recruitment numbers sort of dry up once these ordinances came into effect.
Yes, it is difficult. And even if you are a Yakuza member, at the moment, there are not many advantages in being one. So, for example, for the same crime, if you are a Yakuza and if you are not a Yakuza would be in prison for longer because it is kind of like a patterned activity. So something they would repeat. And so they get a longer sentence. So the number have gone down quite a lot. On the other hand, we don't know how really, you know, actually they have gone down, because a lot of people who have left the Yakuza are not in a, like, they do not have a job, they are not doing anything else, they are not registered as, you know, working for any company. So the kind of idea is that a lot of people who have left the Yakuza, they are still unofficially part of the criminal underworld. So these numbers, they look very good for the government. On the other hand, you know, the actual situation is that these people have not been reintegrated into society. And that's also something that you should take in consideration.
Does that mean that in some ways, the sort of claims that the Yakuza are in decline are a bit overblown? Like if there are a number of people who aren't members of an organized criminal syndicate but are still involved in crime, did the number of disorganized criminals just go up?
I mean, usually you don't have a number for disorganized criminals, so it is a little bit difficult to count. What we know is that around 5% of people who left the Yakuza, they do have like a normal occupation, and they do have like they do have a normal job. So that leaves us with thousands of people who have officially left the Yakuza but are not doing anything in the legal markets, let's say. I mean, you can see it is quite visible that the Yakuza is getting older, and you know that they are getting fewer and fewer. So membership, it is going down. I think what is happening is kind of like a reorganization of the way of working for the Japanese criminal underworld. So while in the past you had a lot of people who were in the Yakuza ranks, now probably the same people, the people who would be, let's say, at the bottom of the structure, they are not made members, and they kind of work regularly for the Yakuza in some capacity, but without, you know, being a responsibility of the organization, which is something, you know, that for the Yakuza is very important at the moment, not to have people who cause problems for them.
So this decline, what does it look like on the ground? Like, I'm thinking about Kabukicho, which is an entertainment district in Shinjuku. It was once notorious for its Yakuza connections, but today it's more or less like a heavily sanitized tourist location. This is also an area that you've done research as well, correct? Like, what does the decline look like in places that were once known for being sort of like the home turf for a Yakuza syndicate?
Yes, especially I would say in central Tokyo, where, you know, tourism in Japan has really exploded in the past few years. So it is not a good look to have Yakuza people going around, or like Yakuza related people as well, and trying to, you know, call you to go to some hostess bar. It doesn't really look very good. So it is a problem for the Yakuza to operate there, so they kind of retreated from that area. It is not worth it anymore. I'm not saying that there is no Yakuza in Kabukicho. It is quite big. There are so many, you know, nighttime entertainment establishments that it is difficult to say that there's no Yakuza in Kabukicho. Of course, there is, like, their presence is much less visible, but I would argue also that their power has diminished in that area.
So if the Yakuza are less visible on the streets and they have less presence in legal businesses, how are they making money today?
Well, first of all, protection business. So let's say when people pay to the local Yakuza group for their shop or for their bar or establishment to, you know, be protected, let's say, by the Yakuza. So if they have a problem, the Yakuza would kind of solve the problem in, let's say, a smooth way. So that kind of territorial control is very crucial. Then, of course, we have a range of illegal activities. So drugs, of course, gambling, prostitution, frauds. Frauds is becoming quite common, and it is also one of the reasons that the Yakuza is less tolerated. So as long as the Yakuza is organizing, let's say, hostess bars, then it's fine. But if they are kind of, you know, going to normal citizens and frauding, especially old people, then that really is a problem for society. So that's why also I would argue they are less and less tolerated.
So we talked a lot in this conversation about sort of some of the foundational myths of what the Yakuza are, that they're a necessary evil that exists within Japan. But you're also saying that there's much less tolerance for that kind of behavior these days. Do you think that there's still a place in Japanese society for groups like the Yakuza?
I think there still is a place. They still think that the Yakuza has some kind of role. I think there is some kind of, you know, preoccupation or worry for what can happen if the Yakuza is not there, because it has been a kind of regulating force in the Japanese underworld. So not having them kind of causes some kind of anxiety for what can come next. Especially there have been many cases, you know, if you look at Japanese newspapers, like reports of Chinese scams. And so this is something that is kind of coming up and causes anxiety in the population.
So the main concern here basically is, like, with or without the Yakuza, crime still exists, right? So people are concerned about what potentially could replace them if they vanish?
Exactly. And if something that replaces that does not have, I mean, the Yakuza say that, right, that they have at heart the future of Japanese society and to protect Japan and Japanese people. So they do have some kind of political mission there as well, which is not the center of their activity. But, you know, we have to see that it is there. So if you have a criminal group whose only interest is making money, I think that could cause worry because they do not have, they are not, other groups that are not a Yakuza are not seen as having a moral code. And the Yakuza is seen as still having one. They are seen as getting older and getting weaker, and this kind of desperation within the Yakuza is driving them towards predatory activities. But in general, they do still have a moral code that they try to respect.
That was Dr. Martina Baradell, a criminologist with the University of Oxford. You can find more Japan coverage online at scmp.com. I'm Jonathan Vitt. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.